Really happy to welcome to the program today the car doctor, John Paul from AAA Northeast, is joining us to chat all things travel and in studio. John, good to see you.
Good to be here. It's my first time in a studio in a year and a half since the beginning of the pandemic, so it's great to be here.
We are honored to have you as our in-studio guest, and
Thank you.
Going to be doing a lot more of that, too, in the future. We look forward to that as well. There's nothing like face-to-face.
No, it really is. As much as all of those other ways to communicate, it's always good when you can actually see the person and, you know, see if you make a mistake by their facial expressions,
That's
things
right,
like that.
Exactly. Yeah. How's AAA been functioning during the pandemic?
Amazingly well. Yeah. We have a total between five states. We have about 3,000 employees. And when all the pandemic first started, our boss was smart enough to try to buy every laptop computer that could be found anywhere and pretty much sent everybody home. And I think we had, you know, not counting road service people that go out and do the road service
right.
calls. I think we had 2,600 people working from home.
Mm-hmm.
And our main building in Providence, Rhode Island, that normally during the day houses 550 people, the last time I was there, I think there was 12.
It's amazing.
Yeah. But we're coming back. The plan is that people will come back at least in a hybrid fashion probably in September.
Yeah.
But some of the work-at-home people that fill in some of the odd shifts, for instance, call receivers for emergency road service, that may be a little bit hard to fill at, you know, 4 in the afternoon till 8 at night sort of thing, that work at home, this has worked out really well. We've found that people are a lot more flexible because they can be home at that time without having to worry about rushing in and rushing out. So
sure.
It's worked out really well. And our road service folks have, you know, been out doing the job. We've kind of had to make a few changes. Originally, if you broke down by the side of the road, for instance, you can't socially distance inside a cab of a truck.
Right.
So we'll usually send someone to pick you up.
Okay.
Or we'll make arrangements with Uber or Lyft or something
sure.
like that.
Sure, they're as much first responders as anybody else.
We've tried to take care of all of that sort of thing and try to keep our drivers safe.
Sure.
And we also want to make sure we keep our members safe, because you never know, our driver could be, you know, non-symptomatic, and you know, you don't want them to give anything to somebody else. So we put a lot of steps in place of sanitizing and making sure everybody had, you know, masks and gloves mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. hand sanitizer and all that sort of stuff. So, but it's worked out okay, and we usually, you know, set the expectation right from the very beginning, and we'll never leave anybody by the side of the road.
Right.
So, you know, if we can't find a ride, then we'll do the best we can to make sure that we can at least bring them someplace safe and then get their car to where it
yeah.
has to go. But for the most part, you know, when somebody says, you know, my car's broken down in my driveway, then it's nice and easy. We just take it to wherever it has to go and,
yep.
and sometimes take it back if they have to. So, yeah.
Were you impacted at all by the registry of motor vehicles going completely virtual?
Not really, because we did, once we could open our offices back in whenever it was May of last year
yeah.
or June of last year with very limited amounts of people, we did the same thing the registry did.
Okay.
We just set appointments.
Oh, all right.
And even talking to people at the registry with the drop-off for license plates now and all that, they said it's working out so well, they may never go back to doing it the other way.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So it's worked out well. You know, so we still do, you know, driver's license renewals and registration renewals and Real ID.
Yep.
And we have that little bit of a breathing room now where they extended the Real ID deadline. So people are still coming in, and we're still recommending if your license is going to be renewed and you want, you know, you are a traveler
mm-hmm.
and you travel periodically, or you need to go in and out of a federal building or something like that,
yep.
certainly, you know, get the Real ID, just bring all the paperwork. And for the most part, you know, getting all the paperwork straightened out is just a matter of really just paying attention to the directions.
Yes.
And, you know,
and finding your birth certificate shoved in a back of a file cabinet somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that can always be a little bit of a challenge sometimes. My wife's birth certificate or marriage license, we couldn't find it. We got it duplicated 10 or 15 years ago, and for some reason on the new one it had her maiden name
hmm.
instead of her married name. And she's like, but But, you know, and
you just have to get married again, John.
Yeah, yeah. So we had a, you know, there was a whole little rigmarole to go through because that didn't follow the proper steps.
Yeah.
Fortunately, she had a passport, and the passport kind of overrode
that. Which is always
good. So, yeah. So for people with passports, it makes it really easy. But
sure.
For people that, you know, maybe have been in this country a long time, but maybe never became a citizen, or mm-hmm. when they did, they never realized what they needed. I was talking to a woman in her late 70s that came here from Italy when she was 5, mm-hmm. and she literally has a handwritten birth certificate
sure. yeah.
from some little town in Italy.
Yep.
And the R&V looked at that and went, I don't think so.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, you know, they're and she's still working on trying to get that all resolved.
Okay.
So, yeah.
One thing that is back to, seems like anyway, normal is traffic.
Yeah, it certainly is. I was going in and out of Boston a couple weeks ago, and I was just amazed at the amount of traffic. And I forgot how aggressive Boston drivers are.
They didn't forget.
They didn't forget, but I guess I did.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot of traffic still.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, though, it still seems to lighten up a little bit here and there. Like, there are people that are kind of working a hybrid mm-hmm. schedule, it mm-hmm. seems like. So. But yeah, traffic's back, and what we've been trying to remind people probably for the last 6 or 8 months or so is your car probably really hasn't been driven as much as it used to, so get it in for service, have it checked out. I, you know, always joke once the pandemic started that, you know, what we always referred to as MPG, miles per gallon, mm-hmm. started to mean months per gallon,
right.
because
yep.
people weren't really driving that much.
Yep.
And, you know, brakes can suffer from not being used, tires, maybe you hit a pothole in the wintertime, you didn't think anything of it,
sure.
and you're going to plan that vacation trip, and you want to make sure that, you know, everything's in good shape that
mm-hmm.
may have suffered a little bit from sitting
yeah.
still.
Even the gas yeah. might have gotten
yeah.
stale, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it a few months of sitting with the original gas in it can start to have some drivability effects. Sometimes it might turn on a check engine light and there's
right.
really nothing wrong with the car
yeah.
other than the gasoline got a little bit stale, and a couple of fresh tanks of gas will usually
okay.
remedy that. But
speaking
yeah.
of gas,
oh yeah,
are we looking at least $3 a gallon, do you think?
It certainly seems we're
yeah.
awfully close all around here. You know, we're a little over $3 a gallon in Connecticut, New York,
oh,
and New
okay.
Jersey right now. So all tax related more than here. But certainly the wholesale price of gasoline on the mercantile exchange where it trades is about, I think this morning when I looked, it was $2.30 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add in transportation and markup, it's going to be $3 a gallon.
Okay.
I mean, that's really what it's going to come down to. And we've seen the highest crude oil prices in probably the past 29 months or so.
Yes.
So I think 2018 was the last time we saw crude oil this high.
Yep.
And crude oil is about 60% of the cost of gasoline. So when crude oil goes up, and there's a lot of reasons for it. Some of it's geopolitical that I don't even pretend to understand, the Iran nuclear treaty and all that.
Mm.
And Iran's not shipping crude oil right now,
mm-hmm.
and that can affect it, but it comes right down to supply and demand,
right.
and
yeah.
with the demand stronger because more people are traveling and more people are out, and the prices tend to go up, and even when they come down, they always go up fast and they come down slowly,
yes.
because the gas stations have to try to anticipate the increase because they have to pay for that 10,000 gallons worth of gasoline they just got delivered.
Right.
When the prices start to come down, that's where the profit's made. So when they're charging $3 a gallon for gasoline that they paid less for, the longer they can kind of hold out until kind of the local market drives the price back down, the more profit they make. Yeah. And there was a time not that many years ago that if you talk to a gas station owner, and they sort of pay almost with a credit card when the tanker truck comes
okay.
in. And they didn't make enough money on the sales of the gasoline in the tank, in the ground, to pay for what was coming out of the tank.
Yes.
So there might have been 7 or 8 months that they were running kind of a deficit.
Yep.
And then there's 4 or 5 months where they made some profit that made up for that. So when they average it all out, when you hear gas station owners going, we're making 4 or 5 cents a gallon, there was times where that was really the case.
Yeah. Yeah. We're in the midst of what you call the 100 deadliest days.
Yeah, you know, it's a unfortunate time between Labor Day and or Memorial Day and Labor Day
yeah.
when we see driving deaths go up, and especially with young, inexperienced drivers. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reason. I mean, even prior to the pandemic, you know, kids were in school, they weren't really driving, they get out, they have summer, they're out. And kids in general don't have the ability to assess risk the same way adults do. So our brain doesn't fully develop until you're 25 or 26 years old. So when you see kids doing something that doesn't seem like it makes sense to us, it's because it doesn't, that part of their brain that says it's okay to do that hasn't developed yet. So we see a lot of crashes. It's interesting that a lot of younger drivers do a really good job, 21, 25-year-olds, they would never think of getting in a car with somebody who's been drinking. They have designated drivers. They just kind of plan ahead. But they don't think about anything. They don't think about it when it comes to marijuana use. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we've found is that same group of young people that would say, I would never get in a car with somebody who's been drinking. How about somebody who just, you know, smoked a joint? And they're like, oh, yeah, what's the problem?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
because it impairs your abilities as much. Right?
Yeah. And it really, you know, besides the physical impairment, you know, slower reaction times and blurred vision and all that sort of stuff, it's the cognitive part. It's the decision making. Mm-hmm. So it's the same as the, you know, the old expression of one for the road. You have that one extra drink because that part of your brain that says, oh, I can have one more, I'm fine. You know, if in the beginning of your drinking evening, you'd probably say, no, that would be crazy to
do.
But
right.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's one of the things. So at AAA, what we're doing is on our AAA Facebook page, every day for the 100 days, we're having some kind of a message to try to help keep people safe. It could be videos on safe driving. It could be just some safety tips. I did a couple of videos to talk about how technology, both in the car and aftermarket, can help keep kids safe. Ford has the My Key program where you can literally program the key that the car can only go so fast, the radio volume can only be so high. Mm. GM has a teen driver program where it does very similar things but also issues a report card.
Oh, okay.
So you know kind of how fast the car has gone, how quickly it stopped, things like that. And then there's some aftermarket companies. There's one called True Motion Family where you download an app in your phone, and it basically does kind of the same thing. You know, how many panic stops, how many hard accelerations, things that are in your phone already that they've tweaked to be able to make it all work. And it's a free app, and everybody in the family can kind of sign up for it. That way, the teen can go, hey, Mom, I was just looking at the report card, and apparently you were speeding, and, you know. So it kind of all works together.
All right. So there it'll hold you accountable, basically.
Yeah. And then there's, a lot of times, you know, the teen's car is the parent's hand-me-down car.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what we try to tell parents of younger teens is, if that is your plan, maybe your next car that you want to buy should be a little safer, have more technology in it, because that's the car you're going to give your 17 or 18-year-old in 3 or 4 years. So add the extra safety technology, like not just anti-lock brakes, but automatic emergency braking, where if the car in front of you stops and you're not paying attention, it's going to slow down or stop the car. Better blind spot monitors, cross-traffic alert, smarter cruise control, things like that. And look at, maybe you were looking at different SUVs, try to find the one with the safest crash test rating, because that may be the car that your kid's going to go into.
Okay.
So we've tried to help parents come up with sort of a list of safer cars for teens.
Okay. Speaking of cars, they're expensive and getting more so every single day, John. What is going on with the price of new and used vehicles, actually?
The average price of a new car today, I think, just crossed the $42,000 barrier.
Really?
Yeah. So now that's an average, of course. And
so half or more, half or less.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. but that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. And one of the reasons, too, is because of the semiconductor shortage.
Yes.
Prices are going up because availability isn't there.
Yep.
And that has also impacted the used car market. I just read this morning that used car prices are up 32% over last year. Now, there isn't as much inventory, which is one of, you know, going almost like gasoline,
again, supply and demand. Yeah.
And what happened was, at the beginning of the pandemic, a lot of people decided not to take public transportation.
Yeah.
So they went out and tried to find used cars. That kicked up the prices. Mm-hmm. Other people that maybe had more than one home, so they lived in, you know, the city in New York, but they have a lake house or a cape house or something like that, mm-hmm. and they moved there figuring it was going to be safer or less people mm-hmm. around,
yep.
and they're like, oh, well, I didn't have a car
need
in
a
the
car
city.
Now
I need a car. So that has certainly impacted the used car prices. And the other part, and it's sort of travel related, is a lot of cars on the used car market were former rent-a-cars, were former Hertz and Avis and all of those. Well, a lot of those companies filed bankruptcy back in the beginning of the pandemic.
Nobody needed a rental car, so they cut down
their fleet.
Yeah.
And without that fleet turning over, those cars didn't go into the used car market.
Yep.
So that has had a kind of interesting effect on it as well. I read a couple of times over the past 6 or 8 months, used cars got so tight that people would go to the local U-Haul and rent a pickup truck because they couldn't get a car from Hertz or Avis.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, So I can't imagine, you know, a 20-foot box truck to go sightseeing in, but I guess, you know, some people have. And I talked to somebody just the other day who said they tried to rent a car, and all they really wanted to do was rent it for one day to get from the airport or near the airport to their friend's home.
Yeah.
And they ended up renting one of those 90-minute rentals from the home improvement store.
No kidding.
Yeah, so they took an Uber to the home improvement store,
yep.
and then
got one of those,
and then drove it, and then dropped it off at the home improvement store near the house of the person they were going to visit. So
just to have some transportation.
Yeah.
Huh, I wonder if it'll signal a comeback for the taxi industry or
it very well could be.
Yeah.
All of these things together, I think, will. So, as we're starting to see the world coming back together again,
mm-hmm.
and more travel, more people going back and forth to work, the city starting to kind of open up and fill up with people, I think we'll see more of that. And then, you know, as the, I think Hertz filed bankruptcy, but I guess they've secured enough funding now where they're sort of out of bankruptcy, I guess, or in that stage where they're out of bankruptcy. So they'll probably start fortifying their fleet. But what we've told people that are traveling, kind of expect changes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you made a flight reservation 4 or 5 months ago, don't be surprised if it gets changed a couple of times between the time you made it and the time you're leaving.
Okay.
Because the airlines are trying to be as efficient as possible, and they might have had a morning and an afternoon flight,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to cram everybody in the afternoon flight because that financially made more sense.
Yeah.
So changes are fairly common still.
It's probably a good idea more than ever to use a travel agent.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Where you can have somebody, you know, call on your behalf. At the beginning of the pandemic, our travel agents pretty much all they did was change people's travel dates for them.
Right.
In fact, we didn't even say, you know, cancel. We just said postpone.
Mm-hmm.
Let's postpone it. And for the people who didn't want to postpone, you know, there was some question on whether your travel insurance was going to pay for pandemic-related cases. And we have a really good relationship with our travel insurance people. And even if that was in the clause, we said, yeah, you really need to do something about this.
Okay.
And we really tried to help people where they could. Where if you're doing it online by yourself, who are you going to call?
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you have the power of an agency like yours and the buying power behind it, they're going to move on it.
Yeah.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Good advice
yeah.
for sure. 4th of July is coming up, John.
It is.
Yes.
It is.
What is AAA anticipating?
Well, we think it's going to be, it was fairly busy last year during the, you know, height of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And we expect it to be equally as busy. We had a very busy Memorial Day, There was, you know, 37 million people traveling in, over Memorial Day.
Even though it was a complete washout for the whole weekend.
But on the other hand, there was still a lot of people traveling. And, you know, talking to the folks at the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce, you know, if you haven't made a reservation to rent a cottage or a hotel room, you're probably not going to get one. That's what they're saying. So the big concern always is there going to be enough help to, you know, satisfy all the people that are coming there? That's
an issue in non-pandemic and years.
That's exactly so. So 4th of July travel, we'll know more by next week. We'll have our surveys back to really know what's going on with 4th of July travel. But based on what we've seen coming, you know, out of January going forward, just this past week, TSA put, you know, 2 million people through the checkpoints in one day.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's the highest number we've seen in the past year and a half. So so people are certainly going back to travel.
Is it domestic more than international?
Yeah, international travel still a little on the sketchy side.
Yeah.
People aren't quite sure what to do yet.
Right.
One of my coworkers has had planned to go to Italy last year. Her trip, she canceled it. She's trying again this year. So she's hoping for the best. Canadian travel is starting to open up, so you can go, you know, in and out of Canada a little bit easier now. I think that just opened up this past week.
Okay.
So we're starting to see a little bit more of that. Places like Aruba, the Dominican Republic, they seem to be a step ahead when it came to the pandemic. So they were taking sort of a lot of extra steps, especially Aruba, where people felt much more comfortable going to Aruba than maybe going to the UK, for instance.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, it's an island.
It's an island, yeah.
I mean, we saw Hawaii had really good success.
Yeah. Yeah, and for people who went to Hawaii, it was sort of interesting because I was talking to somebody who went, and they said, you know, you really had a quarantine for 2 weeks.
Right.
And
they weren't messing around.
And if you snuck out of your hotel, they would report you.
Yes.
You know, so they said it was kind of... It was a little frustrating.
Big brother-ish. But
I said, but you get to look out the window and look at palm trees in the ocean, so it made it a little bit better.
Right.
But yeah. So So that was you know, some of the challenges that we've faced. But I really do think we're going to see a lot of people traveling, and I think people are starting to feel a little bit more relaxed, knowing that the percentage of people being vaccinated, the numbers are going up a little bit all the time.
Right.
You know, people are starting to feel a little bit more relaxed, I think, with it. So
it's a key, tourism is a key industry in a lot, including Boston.
It certainly is. Yeah. And, you know, whether it's Boston, Cape Cod, you know, the Lakes regions up in New Hampshire, you know, that kind of, you know, Rhode Island into the Connecticut coast, the beaches down there, they're all big tourist destinations. And, you know, out in the Berkshires as well.
Summer
out in the Berkshires is a big time. So, you know, getting people, you know, back to travel, and people want to travel.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it really comes down to.
Yeah.
Again, we called it revenge travel.
Right.
I thought that was kind of a funny term, but it really is. People are like, no, I created, you know, just sitting at home for the past year and a half, I created a bucket list
that's
of places I want to go, and I'm going.
That's it. Time is ticking.
Exactly.
Good place to get a hold of you, John?
Always the easiest way to get a hold of me, go to AAA.com/cardoctor. And you can read some of the stuff I've written, but also there's a space there where you can ask a question. I answer every single question I get, even the crazy ones.
Okay.
But I answer every single question I get with a personal response. So
nice.
AAA.com/cardoctor.
All right. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
We'll have you back again in studio.
In studio. Perfect.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.